Hello and welcome. You are tuned into another edition of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. Happy New Year. I am your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program each and every week, I find and feature a theme relating to Appalachian culture and folk life, and then I play songs and feature stories all about our topic of choice. I also love to interview a variety of guests to talk about things that they're doing in and around the region. And today I'll be kicking off 2023 with my first guest of the year, Eugene Wolf. Eugene is well known for years of work acting at the Barter Theater in Abingdon, Virginia, and as a musician in the band The Brother Boys with Ed Snodderly. Eugene has also performed across the U.S. and in other parts of the world. His one-man show, The Book of Mamaw, is a solo performance featuring songs, stories, and sketches about growing up with his grandmother in Greenville, Tennessee. The Book of Mamaw is a musical tale of a surprising spiritual path to kindness and compassion. Today, we will be talking to Eugene all about all of his creative pursuits and so much more. It was such a joy and really an absolute delight to sit down and talk with Eugene about his life and career. So please stay tuned for a great conversation on today's program. First up, here is a song from my guest to get things started off the Brother Boys' latest album, More Mule, released in 2022. Here is I'll Be There If You Ever Want Me.
There ain't no chain strong enough to hold me. There ain't no breeze big enough to slow me. Never have seen a river that's too wide. There ain't no jail town enough to lock me. There ain't no bend big enough to stop me. I'll be there if you ever want me by your side. Love me if you're ever gonna love me. I never have seen a road too rough to ride. There ain't no chain strong enough to hold me. To slow me, I'll be there if you ever want me by your side. There ain't no rope stout enough to bind me. Look for me, honey, you'll find me any old time. You're ready with your charms. I'll be there, ready and awaiting. There won't be any hesitating. I'll be there if you ever want me in your arms. Love me if you're ever gonna love me. I never have seen a road too rough to ride. There ain't no chain strong enough to hold me. There ain't no breeze big enough to slow me. I'll be there if you ever want me by your side.
Is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown. Things will be great when you're downtown. No finer place for sure.
Petula Clark with her song Downtown, which is also featured in Eugene's solo one-man show, The Book of Mamaw. He's going to be talking a little bit more about that here in our conversation, and we're going to go ahead and get that conversation rolling. Let's go ahead and hop on in.
You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over, happy again. The lights are much brighter there. You can forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown, where all the lights are bright. Downtown, waiting for you tonight. Downtown, you're gonna
All right, folks. So joining me now is my guest, Eugene Wolf. Eugene is well known for his many years of talented work with the Barter Theater in Abingdon, Virginia, and as a musician in the band The Brother Boys with Ed Snodderly. Eugene has performed across the U.S. and in many parts of the world. Actor, musician, and all around really one of the most wonderful people that I know. And I mean that, Eugene Wolf. It's so great to have you here.
Well, you're mighty kind, Tony. I'm glad to be here. I love talking to you.
Well, let's start our conversation by talking a little bit about the show, The Book of Mamaw, which is a one-man solo show that tells the story of Eugene and his mamaw, a Church of Christ grandmother who raised him. The play is an autobiographical musical journey through self-discovery and revelation. Really, it's beautifully moving. I caught the show in Abingdon back in, I think we were just talking before we started recording here, probably like 2018, probably. Mm-hmm. It was back when it first started. Completely moved by it. I was sitting in the front row and was just like crying the whole time. Yeah. Amazing. So Eugene, tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea for this show and what made you decide to make it a solo performance?
I've been telling stories about my grandmother my whole life. I mean, my grandmother was a story, you know, in spite of herself. I was always telling stories. When I went to college, I would tell stories. I wasn't even thinking about telling stories. I would just say, oh, you know what Mamaw said? Or do you know what Mamaw did? And my college friends in theater, my theater friends would go, what? She did what? Hold on, Eugene. What? Well, that is a funny, you know. So they were always saying, Eugene, you have to collect all of these stories at some point. Well, that was of course, 50 years ago. So it's taken me a while to actually write this thing. But anyway, so in 2018, I had double bypass heart surgery. I was working at Barter, and I had to take 7 weeks off so they could fix my heart. And I had to come back to play AP Carter in Keep on the Sunny Side. So they nursed me through this transition, this rehab. And I thought, you know, this all happened. I had my surgery. I was very happy with all that. And I was so thankful Barter had kept me on salary during that time. So I thought, I want to pay the Barter back. So I thought, how can I do this? And I thought, well, I can tell Mamaw stories, of course. So I just started thinking, what do you mean we have to tell Mamaw stories? So I started an outline and I started thinking, well, music is a big part of this thing because what triggered the fact that I'm a performer and a musician today is the music. And when I was 2 years old, my grandmother noted that I would go crazy when the Valleydale Pigs would come on the TV commercial. This was 1956. And it was like, I've heard so many people say the Valleydale. I did the same thing. My mother says that I flew to the TV. So anyway, that's how my play starts, with music. So I just kept telling the stories. I called that Clear from the Start. I made an album out of it. And I decided to, in 2017, my friend Brian Tibbs at the Lincoln Theater said, Eugene, do you have anything you'd like to do? I've just taken over the theater and I'm going to promote regional stuff. He said, do you have anything? People had been said, Eugene, make that into a play, make it into a play. So I said, okay, let's do it. This was April. He said, I've got a date. Let's do it in October. So in October of 2017, I finally sat down, wrote the stories out, put an outline, and made a play out of it, thinking, I don't know if this will work or not. And 5 years later, I'm still doing it more and more and more. So I think it does kind of work.
I think it works, definitely, yeah. Well, I mean, it really is amazing. So tell people a little bit about what they would expect when they come see the show. And what's one of your favorite, I guess, parts of the play? Because, again, you're talking about there are all these stories of your mama. Yeah, just what can folks expect?
Well, you know, it's little anecdotes, and it's chronological. I talk about being born and why I lived with my grandmother and my granddaddy, what life was like in small town Greenville. For instance, I sing the song Downtown. The play is chronological, and I use music to tell us where we are in time, but also how my grandmother was reacting to where we are in time. And so when I sing the song Downtown, saying that, you know, when Petula Clark sang that, it was exciting, but I didn't know what she was talking about. I mean, I'd been to downtown Greenville, so I wondered what it was, but she gave me a chance to dream. And there's something about that song the audience loves to sing along with, Downtown, because I don't know, I think for many people my age, my generation, that song opened up a lot of possibility for people, particularly people in small towns. There was something about, there's more out there. So that's how the music fits in. I have an Avon segment. My grandmother took me selling Avon with her and would make me sing. My grandmother would enter me in talent contests, and I didn't know. I'd come in from playing on a Saturday afternoon and wonder, well, where am I going to sing tonight? And we'd be down at West Green, or we'd be out at DeBusk, or somewhere around Greenville. So she just made a performer of me. I didn't buck. I loved it, because I love to sing, and I love the attention. If I can make you laugh, you're my friend. I know that seems easy, but it's kind of true, you know?
Yeah. Why do you think people can connect so much with the show? I think it's got this relatability of, well, for me, the relatability of being raised by a grandmother is in there, and I think a lot of people can connect with that. Mm-hmm. But why do you feel it's so relatable to just a general audience? Because I've seen the show once. I want to come see it again, and I'm telling you, it stuck with me. It's one of those things that just really, it really sticks with you. And yeah, so what's so relatable about it, do you think, between you and just the audience?
The word foundation comes to mind. Foundation, I credit my grandmother for giving me a foundation for life. And I talk about that in terms of church. I was raised in the Church of Christ. We didn't have instruments. We didn't have a piano or anything. So I learned to hear music. I learned to hear a lot of things because there wasn't an instrument there. But the fundamental doctrine of that church didn't necessarily fit my life. But I watched my grandmother sit and read her Bible, study, and the room would change when she was tuned in to her spirit. And I would just get out of the way because I knew I wasn't going to mess with that. But I find myself these days, even though I didn't accept that doctrine, I find myself as my grandmother, sitting, reading my spirit, reading the spiritual things. So my grandmother gave me the form, mm-hmm, of devotion, and it has helped me live this life. Life ain't easy. We all know that. And so I have a connection to my foundation, and it, like I said, I'm 68 years old now, and it still serves me to this day. And I think a lot of people are hearkening back as the world becomes more chaotic, particularly the political landscape, the cultural landscape, all the fighting, fussing, growling. We need somewhere to go to rest. And my grandmother gave me the form of how not just to rest, but to sit back and understand how to receive life. Life is all in how you receive it. Bad things are going to happen. Great things are going to happen. And where do you live? Do you get too excited or do you get too mad? Or I'm looking for bliss at 68 years old. And frankly, I have found a place. My story leads me to find a way to deal with all the huge, big questions that arose out of my relationship with my generation removed grandmother that didn't serve me very well. The things that did serve me have allowed me at 68 to have some peace. So I think people respond to that in my show.
Yeah, that's so wonderfully put. What do you want people to take away after they see the show? Again, for me, it was just like handkerchiefs full of tissues. Uh-huh. I was like, I'm going to take these tears with me.
Yes, well, there's cleansing in weeping. There's big and laughter. I mean, my grandmother was very funny in spite of herself. I mean, like I said, she would take me selling Avon with her when I was a kid, and while she was doing her presentation, she would say, you know, Eugene can sing the 12 Days of Christmas. And so the woman would be like, oh, really? Well, sing some of it, Gene. I don't want to. Sing it. Well, I'd have to sing it. And then while I was singing the 12 Days, Mama would say, he knows all 12 days. And I could see the woman go, oh, really? And then at which point she'd just go ahead and buy two bottles of Skin So Soft and we'd skedaddle out of there fast. But see, my grandmother, that's just how she operated. She didn't think it was funny. When I would tell that story, I first told that story at Down Home when I was with the road company back in the mid 80s. And my grandmother came to the Down Home and she had no idea I was going to tell that story. And she covered her face, but then she also peeked through her fingers to see who was laughing to see that everybody knew it was her that I was talking about. You know, so this that juxtaposition the laughter of it. She, like I said, she was very funny. You laugh and you cry. Joni Mitchell says laughing and crying, it's the same release. You know, so we need release because we're getting so pent up with information, with data, with all the scroll that we need somehow to hearken back to what it is that formed us and take a look at it. And so I've taken quite an extensive look back at what formed me. And so, well, I have to live with it.
What do you think that your grandmother would have thought about you doing this play? I'm sure you've probably thought about that, mm-hmm. But what's your reaction to, you know, my grandma's no longer with here on this earth either. And I sometimes think, oh, you know, I wonder what she would think about this thing. I wonder what she would think about that. And I know that continues your entire life. Mm-hmm. And I'm 30. So, I mean, that'll be there forever. But what do you think she would think about just you turning this into a play?
Oh, she would be so happy. Like I said, she'd peek through her fingers. She would act embarrassed, but then yeah. She'd peek through her fingers to make sure everybody was paying attention. like me in church. But I think she would be very happy. I mean, there's a huge the play takes a turn toward the end about religion and the fact that I've grown up with this fundamentalist religion, and I have to come to terms with my belief system in relationship to my grandmother's. She was very strict. Like I said, there were certain steps that a human being had to take to get into heaven, and there was very little wiggle room. So that's hard to live up to. So my fate comes offers me a way to look at that and a way to live with my choices. And I would only hope that my grandmother would understand from beyond that her intention is alive and well in me, and I will not betray that intention.
That's wonderful. Well, Eugene, we're going to take a quick break, but you also have a performance of the Book of Mamaw coming up on January 6th at the Down Home in Johnson City, Tennessee.
Yes,
so,
I do. Yes,
yeah.
I do.
So if you are listening, you still have a chance to go out and catch that show. But we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Hey, Eugene. So if you are just tuning in, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story, and I am here with guest Eugene Wolf on today's program. Welcome back, Eugene.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So we have been talking all about the Book of Mamaw today here on the program so far. A play that is solo, one-man show, combines drama, personal real-life experience, humor. We were talking a moment ago about how this was kind of your experience in childhood was kind of the kickstart of your performing career. But how did you kind of transition into acting? And when did you really realize that being a performer, being an entertainer, doing all this creative thing outwardly was a really viable opportunity for you?
Well, all through school, all through growing up, I was, like I said, I went to talent contests all the time. So I knew that I would sing along with records. I didn't play any instruments. I just sing along with the record. And of course, I was in plays and things in high school. And then I went to school. I played clarinet. And I went to college at UT in Knoxville on a clarinet scholarship. And I marched in the Pride of the Southland Band for one quarter. I got to march on that at Neyland Stadium. And then I started concert band, and then I decided I had taken a theater class that my start of my freshman year, and I really loved it. I suspected I might like it, but then I decided this is the way I really want to go. So I did that, but I also, for the first time in my life, I had freedom and money. I had a scholarship. So I kind of squandered both of them a little bit. And so I ended up working at a record shop, which is not squandering anything, but I began working for Record Bar in April of 1974. And they offered me right off the bat a chance to move around and manage, be an assistant manager and manage. So everything got put on the back burner a little bit of performing. But I was around music all the time, so that was great. And then in 1980, my soulmate, who was born a theater student, she was 20 minutes older than me. She had been working in Nashville at a dinner theater. And she said, "Eugene, we need some men. Would you come audition?" I was like, no. I was still working at a record shop. I said, no. She said, "Okay, we're going to have a party this weekend. Will you come to the party and then decide?" I said, "Oh, okay then." So I went to Nashville and liked the people. Then I auditioned, and that was the beginning of my professional career. That was the first time I got paid to sing or act. Well, actually, I'd done a TV show back in the late 70s, a CBS television show called Nashville 99, which there's a clip from in my show.
Okay, yeah.
But then I forgot it. Then dinner theater, I learned to sink or swim. And 2.5 years later, in 1982, I got a call to come back to Johnson City to join a company called The Road Company, which was an ensemble of actors that wrote plays and performed them and toured them about concerns of home, of East Tennessee. And so that's when I really found myself. I thought if I was going to make anything as myself as an entertainer, I had to get out of here and change my voice, change my accent. Well, I can't get rid of this accent. I learned pretty quickly. I was a novelty wherever I went. And but I learned that the power of who I am as a performer is my dirt, where I come from. And so that was a huge lesson to me. We wrote a play called Echoes and Postcards, which Ed Snodderly was a member of the company. We wrote it about growing up in East Tennessee in the 50s and 60s. And we wanted to do a tribute to the brother acts, to country music. So we did the Wilburn Brothers, but we called them the What's-Her-Name Brothers. And anyway, people said, "Y'all sound great." And then we became the Brother Boys. And that was like 1986. So it took me a while to actually find my singing voice and decide that, yes, it was worthy of recording, and yes, all of these things. But I've been working professionally since 1980. The Road Company, 1998, we closed our doors, and I had been asked to come to Barter. So I've been at Barter Theater now in Abingdon, Virginia, for 25 years. And I retired full-time about 5 years ago to start doing the Book of Mamaw and other projects. But I don't know anything else I would do, Tony. Actually, I mean, I can hold a pencil and write. I can trace. Let's see, what else could I do? My skills are all about performing.
Yeah. Well, I really like what you said about, the feeling of feeling that you need to leave to in order to make something of yourself, so to speak, mm-hmm. because I think that that is a feeling that a lot of people feel just about being in the Appalachian region. I've got to leave to do something good. And something that I love to talk about here on this show and just really like to feature in a really positive light is just all of the arts and culture that's here in this region.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And a lot of people, I think, from the outside don't, I think it's getting better that more, it's a little bit more accepting that this is a region, it's valid, there are things here. You don't have to leave here anymore to make something of yourself, or you can be really proud to be from this region and you don't have to change your accent. And I love to talk about that because I think it's so important to hear voices and stories of other people who have done just that. They've left, they've realized, I can stay here and I can do really great things. And I think you're a perfect example of just that. And I was just wondering, what are your thoughts on that? Just the arts and culture of the Appalachian region, and maybe how that has shifted since, you know, you started in the 70s and 80s to now. Here we are almost 50 years later.
Well, you know, I think Oh Brother, We're Out There broke open a lot of doors, you know, kicked a lot of doors open, and people began to understand that this music hits somewhere deep. You know, I love that this is song and story, a song and story era, because words are music. Music is, it's all the same thing. And we are so grounded in story here in this region that story plays out through all the arts. It plays out in, of course, when you tell a story. It plays out when you sing a story. It plays out when you paint a story. So people are, we've embraced the notion that story is the important thing. Yeah, I've just come to understand that a story creates us, then we create our story, and then when we leave here, that's the only thing we take, mm-hmm. is story. So I think we have such a tradition of storytelling that it has begun to blossom in all of the other arts, you know? And so we love our stories, so we want to tell them, and this is a perfect place. And then folks like the museum, like the Birthplace of Country Music, who are pulling people and showing us how story plays out and the importance, how vital they are. We are looking for things real these days because everything else is illusion. So much is illusion that we want something real to touch us. And when you go to a theater or a concert and you're in a room with 100 or 1,000 or whatever people, and you're all focusing on one story that's being told or sung or painted or whatever, then you're focusing on the same thing. And I honestly believe that an audience's hearts tune to each other. Mm-hmm. And you may not realize it or think about it, but that's the power of it. That's how we can come together. If you get sometimes, if you know, preaching and doesn't work in whatever, even if it's about religion or whatever it's about, you have to share it. You have to feel it. And we understand that in East Tennessee and Southwest Virginia, that's where the power is, in the dirt of home.
Yeah, and it's such a shared experience, too, just being from the region. And even people that are transplants that come here can feel that, too. You know, they're totally tapped into it as well. So
they feel it. It opens them up. Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I love it. I love talking about it, too.
Me, too. Well, because we validate each other.
Right.
And that's good. You know, I want to say something about song and story. In my story, I start off with... the music plays a huge part, and not just because it puts us and tells us where we are in time, but the way it weaves into the notion of what I'm up to. For instance, my first album when I was 6 years old, my mama let me pick out was a Connie Francis Sings Country and Western Music. Connie Francis, I have no idea why her, but I remember picking it out. My stepdaddy was a truck driver, and so I would spend the summers with them. And so country music was their music, loneliness, songs about cheating, songs about the bottle. All of those things were parts of my life. And so Connie Francis, after Loretta Lynn came along in 1962, when I discovered her, Connie Francis didn't cut it anymore. Loretta would sing songs about things I overheard my mama and my mama whispering about late at night on the phone. And so those things gave me a voice too. I understood that there was somebody out there, a performer, a national performer, who was singing about my life. And that's how the music works in my play. I sing a little bit of the song, The Home You're Tearing Down. I talk about a story where my mama went hunting my stepdaddy, and a shotgun was involved. And I was a little kid. It scared me to death. And it left a big old hole. Well, Loretta showed me how music fills up the holes.
You just mentioned before that about the Brother Boys, mm-hmm. and just being in this almost lifelong, pretty much musical partnership with Ed Snoderly. So you've been in that band for 35 years?
Yeah, well we actually came together as singing brother, the What's-Her-Name Brothers, in 1985 mm-hmm. when we were putting the thing together. About 37 years we've been singing together. And it was just a natural thing to happen. Ed and I grew up watching the same television shows, Porter Wagoner, Wilburn Brothers, locally Virgil Q. Wax, J. Norton Arnie Motors, and Johnson's. You know, all of those things we share those experiences. Ed's a magnificent, he's a magnificent songwriter, musician, and I barely play the guitar these days. I mean, I play barely, but I finally play the guitar. But Ed is the master guitarist and songwriter, and we just sounded good. We sounded like brothers. And so we've carved a career that is satisfying for us. Ed's very busy doing a million. He has a solo career. He has it down home. He teaches. I've had The Barter for 25 years, the Book of Mamaw. Then when we come together, we know exactly who we are. So that's just thrilling. We just did our first album in 25 years. That it's taken us forever to get on the street. but that's how the Brother Boys work. It's an album called More Mule, and it came out. It'll be coming out soon.
Okay.
And we're going to get it on all. We finally got it on Spotify and Apple Music. That took some doing on our part. But nonetheless, like I said, it's a very satisfying relationship to sing with him and make music. And we've been very fortunate. People have paid attention to us. We got written up in Stereo Review and then Entertainment Weekly and then People Magazine. So we think, wow, how did people hear about us? You know, we did a couple of records for Sugar Hill. Jerry Douglas produced one of them. there's something in the works coming that next year that I don't know that I'm free to talk about on the air yet, but a very exciting development for the Brother Boys. So stay tuned.
Yeah. You were also talking about some of that, you know, the shared experience growing up at the same time with the same music and the same media and TV, just the same overall experience, and how some of that music that you're listening to, you know, you still play and you still, you're kind of just keeping alive, I guess, in a sense. And I know, like, y'all do a great cover of Hoping the Lubin Brothers.
Yeah.
And I've tried to do that song so many times.
You have to take a nap after you sing that song.
Oh my gosh. I've been trying to work that up with one of my friends for literally years, and we're like, we're going to get it one day.
Well, so you know, we have a live version of that that'll be on our new, we never recorded that, but we've got a live version that'll be on this new thing that's coming next year. So yeah, that song, I have a performance of us doing the Echoes and Postcards was the play that the Brother Boys grew out of. And we're at the Renaissance Center up in Kingsport. And so it's like one of the first times the What's Her Name Brother Boys ever performed. And we do, it's of Hoping That You're Hoping, and the crowd loves it. It's an exciting song.
Yes, yes. And all of those tight harmonies, and it's Lubin
Brothers.
Fun. Yeah.
But, you know, the Lubin Brothers, my mother and my grandparents, they all grew up in Cock County in a place called Rabbit Hill. And my mother went to a one-room schoolhouse there. Well, when she was 10 and my Aunt Dot was 11, the Lubin Brothers came to that one-room schoolhouse and performed. And they had Roy Husky on bass. I mean, it was like, you know, big time. And Ira Lubin walked my Aunt Dot home.
Whoa.
That night. So, baby, I'm connected, you know.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. Great story. That.
So let's talk a little bit about the barter, and something that connects kind of everything we've talked about so far, theater, performance, and music. So Keep on the Sunny Side is returning to the barter, which was a great play that happened back in 2017, so 5 years ago, and it's coming back again. Mm-hmm. And you played AP Carter in that show. And just tell us a little bit about what that is and what the story is. I mean, it obviously mm-hmm. connects to the birthplace of country music. But yeah, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we wrote the show back in 2002. So it's 20 years. This is its 20th anniversary right now. And it grew out of the Appalachian Festival of Plays and Playwrights at Barter. It was the very first script that was taken and developed. And so Rick Rose asked me to come home and play AP Carter. I was living in Asheville at the time. And it is the story that at that point, not many people knew about the Carter family. The book, Will You Miss Me When I'm Gone, came out that same while we were writing that play. So we got information from that book that Doug Pote, who wrote the play from Marion, Dr. Douglas Pote, he integrated that information into the play. Mm. And so it tells the story. It's about a love story, really, between AP and Sarah, and how that didn't quite work out. But look at the music that it brought to us. The characters are AP and Sarah and Mother Maybelle, of course, and Jeanette, AP and Sarah's daughter, who kept the music alive and built the Carter Fold. And then there are two other characters, two men who play Ralph Peer, who comes from New York to record in Bristol. The other actor plays Joe, Jeanette's brother. And we do a Saturday night at the Fold concert with Joe doing the animal noises, the honk calls, all of those things. But it's like 25 songs that help tell the story. It's not necessarily, I think of it in terms, it's more like a tone poem about their story and how the songs fed into their story as much as these were the things they were released and here's how they played them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more, it's a little more theatrical in its approach to how the music is used. For instance, AP sings more solos than he probably ever sang in his entire life. But that's to help the storytelling of it. And that is coming back in April and May of 2023 for Barter's 90th anniversary.
Wow.
So what's curious to me about that is I've never thought about this. The Barter was founded in 1933. The Carter family recorded their first songs in 1927, which was only 6 years difference. And I never think about them being contemporary. You know, the Carter family sings so much longer ago than the Barter starting, but they're the same. They grew out of the same impulse. I think AP needed to bring beauty to Poor Valley because life ain't easy in Poor Valley. And so he went to the mountains to get the music, and he brought it back because he knew we needed it to get through. Robert Porterfield at Barter during the Depression, he needed work. All of his New York actor friends needed work. He was from Southwest Virginia, so he said to the folks in New York, hey, let's go back to my home in Southwest Virginia and start a theater. And guess what? They can pay us with food. We can barter. So the actors needed food. They needed livelihood. Poor Valley needed the beauty of the music. Everybody needs something to get through, and both of those things happened at pretty much the same time. You know, so it's been thrilling to me to play AP. I've gotten to meet so many people. I got to know Jeanette and Joe, Rita and Dale, the whole family, and just get connected to the culture of the Carter family.
Absolutely. I'm so excited to see the play coming up in April and May. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's going to be soon.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, sooner than I think, yeah. Really. You know, it's been, like you said, we did it last time, I think in 2017, but it started in 2002. So it's got some legs on it.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Well, Eugene, we only have a few minutes left before we got to roll on out. But before we go, I love asking people for advice. So what do you have any advice for anyone listening that is interested in pursuing anything artistic or creative? What would you tell them?
I think it's important to understand where it comes from in you. Why do you want to do it? What is your goal? I mean, and I'm not talking about, oh, I want to be on Broadway or I want to be in a movie. Although those are certainly wonderful goals, if that's what you want. But what is it in you that needs to do this? And explore that. I mean, the Book of Mamaw has taught me a lot about the power of my own story. And I've had to dig deep in some of these places in the show that were not necessarily fun to go to because there's pain. There's pain involved. There's joy also, but we sometimes like to not breathe into the pain. And that has taught me so much. And that kind of thing, when you are in front of an audience, that's the kind of thing, even though you don't expressly say, let me tell you a little about my pain, it's evident. It lives. It gives your whatever your performance, it gives it gravity. And you need to understand, particularly for singers, so many people are making music these days, and I love hearing it, but make sure you know why you're singing the song. Sometimes people make sound and I can't quite understand. I'm gonna tell you. And I think, what are you telling me? Tell me why you're telling me. Let me know why you need to sing it. And those aren't necessarily big, broad strokes, but I need to know you know. And that's what pulls me into you as a performer.
Absolutely. Great advice. One day I'm just going to cut up all the advice questions that I've asked people, and it's just going to be like this motivational audio journey.
That's a great idea, Tony. Wonderful.
Well, before we go, what do you have anything coming up event-wise? Of course, you have the Book of Mamaw on, will be at the Down Home on January 6th in Johnson City, Tennessee. So that is coming up. Do you have anything coming up after that? And where can folks go to learn more about what you are up to?
Well, I have a website that's not active yet. but I do have a, if you're on Facebook, that's the best place to find me, Eugene Wolf. Or I also have a Eugene Wolf-Music page. And that's where I post the things that are coming. Right now, I don't have much coming up. This is kind of a dormant time to get ready for January 6th and also to get ready and find, find out, get ready for Keep on the Sunny Side. in the meantime, I'm just finding out, looking for myself to find out what is the next project for me? Well, what do I need to do? What is it now that needs to come out? I mean, Mamaw is out there. She can take care of herself. She's been to 42nd Street. I took the show to New York and won the audience award for this big United Solo Festival. We got invited to London on the West End, and then COVID happened. Mm-hmm. So Mamaw's on her. She's got her legs. She can go where she wants to. But what do I need to tell? What do I need to tell next? So I'm busy reading and just ruminating about, I just discovered, and I knew who she was, Flannery O'Connor, the writer. And I was in Savannah, Georgia, doing a show called We'll Meet Again that had been part of the AFPP process at Barter. But Savannah Theater did it first, and we took it to Opelika, Alabama, and the coach, Bruce Pearl, the basketball coach, saw the show, and now he's helping raise money to tour it to kids in Alabama. So I'll be part of that, but that won't be until next fall, but there's a lot of work to do to get ready for that. So no big projects except everything that's churning inside.
Hey, it's good to have some resting time, too. I feel like we all don't allow enough time to just be on this planet.
Exactly. We think we've always got to be. Mm-hmm. We've got to get it done. Got to get it done. And I'm learning at 68. I'm looking for a little more bliss, frankly, And it can be blissful to perform, but it can also be blissful to not do anything, including think.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, Eugene Wolf, everybody. Eugene, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
And you can find information on all the things that Eugene just talked about or talked about during our conversation today if you visit the Mountain Song and Story Program blog page. After the show, I'll have some links there so you can go check out where you can find the Book of Mamaw, Keep on the Sunny Side, Eugene's information, and so much more. So go check that out after the show. Thanks again, Eugene.
Thank you.
Every minute of the day I'm thinking about you, and without you life is just a crazy dream. Every breath I take I'm hoping that you're hoping that I'm hoping you return to me. Can you remember, dear, if I ever stop loving you, you'd rather be dead? Well, dear, I don't know what on earth changed your mind. No matter who's holding you, your heart is still mine. Every time I think about the way you cuddled up and spuddled up and filled me with your charm, it's seeming that I'm dreaming, I'm locked in your loving a crazy dream. Every breath I take
sake, I'm hoping that you're hoping that I'm hoping you return to me. Can you remember, dear, when you said if I ever stop loving you, you'd rather be dead? Well, dear, I don't know what on earth changed your mind. No matter who's holding you, your heart is still mine. Every minute of the day I'm thinking about you, and without you life is just a crazy dream. Every breath I take I'm hoping that you're hoping that I'm hoping you return to me.
The Leuven Brothers there with Hoping That You're Hoping. All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can catch this program, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock right here, each and every week on Radio Bristol. You can also check out past shows if you visit the Mountain Song and Story program blog page, found over at listenradiobristol.org. Special thanks again to my guest, Eugene Wolfe, for taking the time to speak with me for today's show. I appreciate it so much. It was such a fun, insightful conversation. As always, I'll have all of the materials and shows playlist posted on the blog page after the show, so please head over there and check it out. If you want to learn more about Eugene, the Brother Boys, the Book of Mamaw, and more. Folks, once again, my name is Toni Doman. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will catch you right here next week.
Everything's